Hi, I'm Elise.
I'm Matt, and welcome to Pod Race, a Star Trek Deep Space Nine podcast. If this is your first time joining us, we're two friends watching Star Trek Deep Space Nine and sharing both our deep and irreverent thoughts on our favorite Star Trek series.
This week, we're talking about Season 6, Episode 2, Rocks and Shoals, teleplay by Ronald D. Moore and directed by Michael Vajar. Rocks and Shoals aired on October 6, 1997.
This week on Deep Space Nine, Sisko's crew crash-land their Jem'Hadar ship into the waters of an alien ocean on a world where a group of Jem'Hadar have also crash-landed, with only one vial of Ketracel White remaining. Meanwhile, on Tarak Nor, Kira finds she cannot live with herself, working side by side with the Dominion. Elise, firstly, it hurts me a little bit, but it's accurate to say meanwhile on Tarak Nor. Sad face.
I felt that for sure. Not my station name.
And then secondly, we'll start the episode as we start most episodes when I remember to ask this question. Did you or did you not remember this episode?
I think we're at 40% remembering. I'm just teasing. I did not remember this. I actually don't remember a lot of what happens in this opening arc of season 6. Because I've only seen it once, and it was a long time ago now. I watched the show a lot faster the first time than we were watching it this time.
So sorry about that.
A lot of it. No. I think I'm retaining. I think I'm retaining it better, if that makes sense.
Yeah. No.
Because I'm not, like, just, like, blitzing through or whatever.
Well, and especially this, I think it's, what is it, like, 6 episodes that open up the season?
Yeah,
they kind of all meld together in your brain, especially when you're doing a binge, right?
Yes, for sure. This doing it this way, you, like, get a little sense of how each episode's different.
Yeah, it's very, it's the what I like to call the Faith Hill approach, because I can feel it breathe.
On that note,
that was a joke from Alyssa.
Oh wait, never mind.
Yeah.
Oh, I was gonna make a joke and then I realized that the joke was wrong. Like I was getting people confused, so I just am skipping the joke.
There you go.
So yeah, this episode actually wasn't my favorite. I didn't like hate it or anything. Sometimes you could tell if it's my don't love it, I won't rewatch it a second time. Like, I watched it on Friday and did not rewatch it again yesterday. So yeah, like, the Kira storyline was very interesting. The Sisko Jem'Hadar storyline felt a little bit, like, expected. Like, so I wasn't as intrigued by that.
Yeah.
I will say, like, I do like Kira's challenged by Vedek Yassim, that maybe working with the Cardassians is not right, given their history and the bigger implications of them and the Dominion being on the station. And I feel like really interested in that conversation in the episode. I think that Kira at the beginning, or for most of this episode, is very different from a previous version of Kira, I guess I would say. And there's a lot of things she says in this episode that I'm like, I can't believe that's coming out of her mouth. But it's like, at the same time, understandable given her position.
Yeah, for sure.
I don't mean understandable like that I think it's okay. I just mean like I can see a person in that position doing that.
This episode overall is a bit of a bummer.
It was really dark.
Both stories kind of end on a bit of a down note. Probably more so the crash landing Jem'Hadar, Vorta, Sisko, and friends story. Because I guess there's a little bit of like hope with the ending of the Kira story and starting the new resistance. Whatever, we'll see what happens with that.
I mean, I still feel like the Kira storyline was just really, it took a really dark thing happening to get her to act.
Yeah, and I guess before we get into it more, just a content warning for listeners, we will be discussing self-harm and suicide in this episode as it pertains to the plot. So if you are sensitive to that, we'll see you next week.
Yeah, I, like, completely forgot about the protest suicide.
Is this the first suicide in Star Trek? Should have looked this up.
I don't know, but it's the first one that's, like... If it's not the first one, it is the first one that's, like, this motivated in this way. But, and I also... I do want to say, like, before we get into it, like, I am really happy with how the show showed it to us. I think just showing her feet was the right call. We didn't need to see more than that. We did not need to be traumatized.
Yeah, so it's not technically the first case of suicide, but I think it's our first political suicide by protest. Oh, because you know what? It's in Deep Space Nine, in Hard Time, O'Brien almost does it, but doesn't do it. And then there's the TNG episode where Worf becomes disabled and then wants to do the Mok Tovar. So yes, and there are a couple other cases now that I look at Memory Alpha, but
do they have a page for suicide?
They have attempted or considered, they have cultural considerations, suicides completed.
I mean, I'm not surprised. That sounds like a video game like statistic, like suicides completed. Like missions accomplished. I was rewatching Ghost Protocol the other day, and I always laugh at the end where Ethan's like having drinks with Luther, and he's like, "You actually said mission accomplished." It's great, great stuff. So, first we have Kira and on Tarek Nor and everybody that's left behind, I guess. Jake is still writing, and he is interviewing Odo and Kira, and he is the one that informs them that there's going to be a demonstration by Vedek Yassim. Like, they don't seem to know anything about it. He's also asking some pretty probing questions on whether they're legitimizing the Dominion. And I felt like this was a good turn from, like, the last time we saw him asking questions, which I think was just last episode with Wei-Yun. Like, he seems like in that, from last week to this week, he's like a lot more professional, I think, even if it like upsets the people he's asking questions of.
I mean, where's Jake in the White House press corps today? I think we could
you
use
know
some
he
of
would
his
get
direct
like
line of questions.
His, he could jump you so know fast. He would he'd get his permanent desk like taken away somehow, given to like Breitbart or whatever
whatever the space Breitbart is.
Is Breitbart even still a thing? I have no idea.
Probably, I don't know.
Yeah, we'll give they'd give it to like Tucker Carlson or something.
What am I trying to say? A, it's funny that Jake's doing this and his stories aren't even being sent. So he's just...
Yeah, I hope he's found... I hope with the new resistance planned, they'll find a way to get messages out, finally.
Stay tuned for that. But I think what...
There's...
Go ahead.
Sorry.
No, go ahead.
You go, and then... No, mine was a new thing, and I forgot that you were speaking because I am an idiot.
It's okay, I tune me out too, and so does a lot of people in
my
life.
That is not what happened. Oh, stop it.
Kira's responses to the interview and her immediate, and Odo's too, immediate concern about what Vedek Yazim's demonstration is going to do and the ability it will give Dukat for a security crackdown, the way it will upset the tenuous status quo, is really telling to me. And yeah, that will likely be or could likely be a logical consequence of like a protest, you know, on the promenade. And yeah, in the short term, that would cause more harm. But that doesn't mean it's not the right thing to do. And Kira's whole like approach, and again, I'm maybe she was hanging out with Odo too much. But the idea of like maintaining order end the status quo above all costs. And it just struck me as like a very non-radical position for a character that like has been very radical and like has been on this journey of like, who am I now after the resistance?
Right. Mm-hmm.
And just accidentally sliding into that is interesting.
Yeah, I felt really, it felt weird that these words were coming out of Kira's mouth. This is the specific like bit I'm talking about when she's talking with Vedic Yassim and she's like, oh, don't do anything. You're going to make things worse for everybody. And it's really interesting because I think that, I mean, she's definitely a different person and has way more responsibility now than she did before the than during the occupation. I'm like, before the occupation was, Kira was born into it. Never mind. And I think that she has like a different perspective, but I don't think it just feels like it's not her when she's saying these things. Like, I fully disagree with her. Like, protesting is supposed to be disruptful. Like, that's the whole point of it. You're supposed to disrupt the bad thing that's happening. Or to disrupt people enough that they stop doing the bad thing.
Yeah.
Like, that's what it's about. And Yassim literally tells Kira, like, you sound like a Dominion apologist. Like, what are you doing? And it's really weird how they leave it, because I really liked Yassim a lot, actually, because Kira's like telling her, you don't understand, because Yassim is coming from a completely different perspective as her. But I also think Yassim is correct. And I like that instead of her saying like, well, explain it to me again, she's like, no, you're right. I don't understand, because none of this makes sense. And I felt that that was a really powerful response to that, like Yassim just being like, I don't understand.
I appreciated too the idea that the person choosing to plan this demonstration and do this active form of resistance was a religious leader too. Like, I think that hits Kira differently and like on a couple different fronts, as like Kira being a very religious character. But in a lot of ways, it, again, folks know, kind of, I've alluded to, like, you know, my background and being raised in Christianity and whatnot, my interest in, like, theology and stuff anyways. But there's a branch of theology that's called liberation theology. And in the American context, James Cone, who's a Black theologian, and then it largely came out of South America as well, I think Argentina, with actual Catholic priests like Gutierrez. And fun fact, the Vatican doesn't like liberation theology. But
there's a lot of things the Vatican doesn't like, right? That people praise them for being less shitty about than they used to be, that I'm like, dude, they still don't like this thing. Like, I don't know what you're talking
it's
about.
It's like, I can't remember who posted it on Blue Sky. But when the Pope died a couple weeks ago, I'm not to date this podcast, but they're like doing a double feature of Conclave and Spotlight to, you know, have fun with the idea of a conclave and men in robes being little bitches to each other, and then actually how horrible the Catholic Church actually is after, as the follow up.
Yes,
but
I think that's great. I didn't rewatch Conclave after the Pope died because I had watched it quite recently. So I instead watched Angels and Demons with our beloved Ewan McGregor.
There you go, the young Pope.
But
no, sorry, just to finish my thought there, because my squirrel moment in the middle talking about Conclave. But liberation
Good
theology
movie.
Is...
You guys should watch it.
Liberation theology at its core, and there are different branches, and I'm like being a little bit reductive, but it's the idea that as Christians, the call is against injustice, is to stand with the poor, is like, it's basically like Catholic Marxism.
Like
it's really kind of aligned with that.
Yeah.
No wonder the Vatican doesn't like
it. That sounds really interesting.
So
Yasm
being a Vedic and doing that act form resistance reminded me of that. But then also, like, you know, the Buddhist monks who self-immolated in kind of the late 60s in Southeast Asia, and even that whole kind of history of like self-immolation and like resistance to the Vietnam War as well. Like, it's it's a very intentional and very, I think, thoughtful choice on the choice of the writers. Like, it could have been an old Resistance buddy. I guess Hurl Cell's dead now because of, the one Brian Fuller episode. But, like, they could have been someone, a peer or a colleague. Brian Fuller's
fucking fault.
Or something like that, right? But to do it as, like, a religious leader, I thought was pretty powerful. And it definitely gave me kind of those late 60s, early 70s anti-Vietnam kind of protest vibes for sure.
Yeah. I mean, even still today, like, this person didn't get killed, but there was on April 28th, there was a reverend praying out loud outside of the Capitol building, and he was arrested. Mm-hmm. And he was just getting... They were giving him multiple warnings for praying out loud, and I'm like, what is the harm in this? Like, I don't understand. But yeah, it was like a Moral Monday, like, pray-in type of thing, and he was protesting, you know, a budget bill or whatever, but it's just like, they charged him with using a law against crowding, obstructing, or incommoding. I don't know what that word means. And like, they're arresting this reverend, and like, the stupid fine on this, the maximum fine on this fucking charge is like $500. Like, what a waste of fucking time. But yeah, it's just Kira's going down a weird path, and like, I do think that Yassim's protest, where she hangs herself off the upper level of the promenade after saying evil must be opposed, really shocked Kira. And I don't think she was prepared for it at all. Like, she did not know that that's what this demonstration was going to be.
No, I think she expected, like, crowds and, like, marches and and sandwich boards and...
Sandwich boards?
Yeah, you know. It's like the end is nigh.
The way you phrased it, I was just, like, expecting, like, someone going around, like, selling hot dogs at, like... the protest. I mean, which I'm Cork sure would totally
do that, right?
I mean, I would buy a hot dog from Cork during a protest. I gotta eat, you know?
Yeah, exactly. But yeah, the protest definitely shakes Kira of her complacency. And she realizes that...
She's like, wait, I'm not a liberal. I'm a leftist. Yeah,
right? I am a revolutionary. I still hold these values. I haven't been living them. So she decides that she doesn't want to be a collaborator anymore. And decides it's time to fight back.
Yeah, and Odo, in the end, agrees to help her, which I think is great. I really love their scenes in this... era, I guess I'll say, like, when they're the two of them and Quark are like the only ones on the station, well, with Jake, of course, so it's just the four of them. And I know we had everything with Odo and Kira at the end of last season, but I think, like, putting that to the side really helps with me being like, oh, these two are really good friends. And I think watching it now, I do feel like there could be a romance, but I also think, like, it doesn't matter, and it's really good, in my opinion, that they have each other to talk to.
There's definitely, you see more kind of, not foundations, you see their, like, emotional intimacy at work. I don't know if I totally, like, I know it's complicated for Odo on Kira now, thanks to old Odo. Being like, hey,
yeah, that's
killed
fair.
A bunch of people for you.
No, I think that that's creepy and weird. I'm just saying, like, within this episode, I'm like turning my brain off and watching this episode in a vacuum for this part of the conversation.
Well, I mean, it's always important to get chores done, and if it helps if Star Trek's on, you do you.
I really do need a vacuum, actually. Do you have anything else to say about our friends and enemies on Tarek Nor currently?
Just that I'm interested that Odo agreed to help. He's on the ruling council. He's like, oh, I don't give it legitimacy. It would be here if I wasn't here. I can influence it from the inside again. Okay, thank you very much, Chuck Schumer.
I do hope that Kira, like, breaks him out of that.
Yeah, so we'll see. Stay I just want to put a pin in that for now, but hold on to that nugget, folks, and we'll see where the ride takes us.
For the A plot, we have Sisko and company. As Matt mentioned in the opening summary, our friends are stranded on a planet inside Dominion space with a fucked up warp drive.
I thought you said and, fucked up warp drive. I'm like, he's not in this episode.
No, because he's out with Martok, planning his wedding.
Martok.
So yeah, they have a fucked up warp. I'm saying warp by accident. Warp drive. On the Jem'Hadar ship that they've been toting around, Kevan, which is like, what if we took the name Kevin and made it weirder?
Jordan
Vorta that we haven't met. Yeah, I'm obsessed with Jordan. Everyone should watch Dad Hat, Dungeons and Dragons: Honor Amongst Thieves, or Among Thieves, whichever one's correct. So yeah, Kevan of Vorta, that is not Jeffrey Combs, and some Jem'Hadar folks crashed on the same planet 2 days earlier. Whoa! And the first and second, as we know, there's always like a rank order of Jem'Hadar. The first and second are dead. Kevan is wounded, and they are very low on Ketracel White. I do love the scene where they like crash and Miles starts screaming about how he tore his pants and everyone starts cackling and hysterically laughing. Like, everyone needed a good laugh in this awful situation. If you recall, like, at the end of last episode, they're like 17 years from home at this point. So, you know, it's funny jokes all around.
Yeah, it's really the least of their problems.
Yes. Like, what is Sisko gonna like give him a demerit or something because his pants are torn even though they're 17 years from home? It's great. Nog and Garrick team up to go look for water and food, and Nog is understandably pretty sus of Garrick after he has previously tried to or threatened to kill him. I actually didn't remember that. Like, I don't remember what they're referencing there.
Sorry, say that again.
Do you? I don't remember what they're referencing.
Oh, Impak Nor. When they...
Okay, yeah. Yes. When he was, like, out of his mind. Yeah. Okay, now
had
now
him
I
all
get
tied
it
up, and, you know.
Yes. Thank stuff. You. And I feel really strongly that, like, I agree. I like feel like if I was Nog, I would probably feel the same way. But it is really like amusing to be like, you can stand in front of me or beside me. You cannot stand behind me.
Yeah.
They're taken prisoner by the Jem'Hadar and they're interrogated. And Nog gives like way too much information. He's like telling them his Starfleet number.
Well, no, that's
and Garrick's like, I'm at.
Sorry, go ahead.
Nope, you, what were you
no,
say?
That's just, that's all he's saying is just about himself. So, like, that's a thing where you can just repeat it over and over again. And, like, it's of no tactical use to them. So that's what he's
no, I understand okay. That. But, like, I do think it's funny that, like, Garrick's whole thing, like, Dog is like, yes, we're, like, you know, kind of admits who he is at least. Yeah. And Garrick's, like, just, like, lying and being like, I'm part of the Dominion. Or whatever he tries to say.
Yeah.
No, you're fine. It was just funny, the two different, like, approaches to, like, dealing with being interrogated. And Kevan's, like, not even interested in all of this. He's injured. He's like, okay, whatever. Do you have a doctor? I think Garrick kind of weighs the situation and realizes, like, if they say no, they're going to probably just get killed. So he tells the truth and says yes. I feel like Garrick would have said yes even if they didn't have a doctor with them.
Yeah.
Just to, like, stall time.
Yeah.
It's really clear that, like, the Jem'Hadar are starting to get antsy because they're low on Ketracel White. So they start, like, firing on Sisko and company, even though, like, they're not supposed to. It's very interesting to see, like, Kevan giving orders and then what actually happens with the orders.
Right.
Like, it's just not, like, a one-to-one thing. The third, whose name I think I wrote down later in the but I don't remember. Like, the third guy, yes, Rod, whatever his name is. We can just, I'm kidding, but we could just take an audio of you saying that and put it in for me every time.
Let's call him Racky.
Racky, yes, okay. That's a good one. So Racky comes into the cave and wants to make a deal. So they're going to exchange Sisko and Bashir for Nog and Garak, which that makes sense to me. Like, obviously, the captain's going to be like, I'll take the most risk and we need the doctor. This part of the, like, the part where Bashir and Sisko go into the other cave to, like, do the surgery is, this is one of my favorite scenes of the whole episode, because Bashir's asked to do that surgery on Kivan, and there's, like, this funny bit where all the Jem'Hadar, like, step closer, yeah. And Bashir's, like, thinking that they're trying to protect Kivan, but basically they just want to watch Grey's Anatomy live. They're like, Kivan's like, they've never seen inside of a Vorta before. Just reminded me of, like, the interns on Grey's Anatomy. Like, it's going to be my first appendectomy, yeah, or whatever. Yeah. The surgery goes well, and Kivan, like, sends all of his people out. And it's really, like, interesting because he admits to Sisko that he only has one vial of Ketracel White left. And he's like, I'm going to send the rest of them to, like, attack you guys, but I'm telling you, so you can just kill them, because yeah, that'll be better than them not having the Ketracel White.
And you can fix this comms device that they're too stupid to fix, because I'm sure you have an engineer.
Right, exactly. It's just, like, very, everything else happens kind of, like, slowly, but, like, I don't think that it much happens. Like, Sisko and Bashir are back with their crew, and, like, he tells them, like, what Kivan said. And everyone's just arguing about what to do. And Sisko just has to be like, dudes, this is my decision. I'm in charge. Like, we're not going to decide this by committee, basically.
Yeah.
And then Miles is like, I am not a committee. I'm just kidding. No one says that.
And I think this is a way, too, we're seeing how things have changed, that we are at war. Because again, like, previously, and, like, you know, Next Gen stuff especially, you'd have the observation lounge, like the briefing room scenes, and yeah, Picard would be the ultimate decider, but
he would ask,
it'd be like, yeah, a group kind of meaning problem solving sort of, like, you know, moral debate, where, yeah, it's like Sisko's like, no, we're at war. This is my time. It's literally them or us. What are we going to do? Like,
yeah. And I mean, I think under less dire situation, he may have at least asked for opinions, but he's like, we don't have time to debate this. Like, this is going to happen as soon as possible.
All while still hoping for a way out that he can turn Ramataclan against Kivan or something. So there's,
yeah.
Yeah.
Which he really does attempt, when Ratia, I'm going to call him that. Oh, and Roddy comes over to start the fighting. Sisko has a chance to tell him, like, "Hey, Kivan betrayed you. He told us that you were coming over here to attack us." And the third is like, "Yeah, I know. I'm not an idiot." Like, yeah, they do seem like, it's so interesting to me because they know that the Vorta would, like, fuck with them, but, like, they're not able to not obey them. Like, even though Kivan sucks, the Jem'Hadar are made to listen to the Vorta. Like, it's part of their nature. They are going to just continue this. And honestly, I think the way that the Jem'Hadar are is, he probably can't see a better situation anyway. Like, I think, didn't they even offer, like, hey, Bashir will make some more Ketracel White for you, like, yeah, and they just still declined.
Yeah. I don't think it's that he can't visualize another future. It's just whether it's because they're designed that way or because his belief in the order of things is so strong that he, yeah, actively chooses to die for what he holds to be true, because we have seen Like even a couple seasons ago, when we met the first Wayun who died at the end of the episode, they do turn against the Vorta and, you know, things like that. So it is possible. I don't think it's as rare as they make it out to be. I just think, and again, trying to tie it into like, if I can find any sort of like master theme from the episode and like tying both plots together, it is about belief and it is about justice and it is about sacrifice for something that you believe in.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense to me.
Because it's that active choice, right? Ramada Khan makes that choice. Yasmin makes that choice. Yeah. And then Kira finally makes a choice, right?
Yeah. Yeah, the Jem'Hadar decide to attack anyway and open fire. And so Sisko and our friends, you know, fight back and ends up killing all of them. And one Starfleet dude dies, I don't remember if they were ever named. You know, Kivon's still in the cave because he's injured and recovering from surgery. And he wants to be a prisoner of war, I guess. I do think Sisko was tempted to kill him, but takes him into custody. And the Starfleet people bury everyone. And that's kind of where it ends. I do think we may see Kivon at least one more time. I don't remember.
So I think based on the kind of tone and like timbre of this episode, we'll be skipping the Altair Water Thirst Quencher section. Not a particularly sexy episode, although if you watch
they were probably thirsty because it was deserty, yeah. But that's about it.
Yeah, if you watch the What We Left Behind documentary, there's some pretty good stuff about filming in the quarry with, I can't remember his name, but the stunt coordinator, and like in those Jem'Hadar prosthetic suits, it was not really good working conditions.
Yeah, that sounds awful.
So yeah, no fun. That was real sweat on the Starfleet officers. Elise, did you have a nominee for the most Star Trek thing?
Yeah, Dax was injured pretty early in the episode and basically gets sidelined the whole time until the end when Sisko needs to, like, talk to his old man friend and make a decision about what to do. And I just hate that. Like, if that woman who... Because that one woman, didn't die that was on their side, like, that could have been Dax fighting. And, like, I just don't know why she was, like, had to be injured.
Yeah.
And like, mostly off screen. What about you?
I think it's the Vorta doing shady shit and the Jem'Hadar knowing it's shady, but like I said, making that active choice to put what they believe as the order of things ahead of self-preservation.
Yeah, that makes sense. The Jem'Hadar and Jem'Hadar.
Also, I guess because it's happened twice,
there have been Vorta.
Two plots about downed Jem'Hadar ships. Because they got this ship because it crash landed. Now their ship's crash landed again, and there's another one crash landed.
They don't make them like they used to.
Was there anything else you wanted to flag about this episode, Elise?
No, I think I'm good.
Awesome. Well, until next time, where can folks find more of you on the internet?
Yes, you can find me on Blue Sky, Letterboxd, and Storygraph at Chicken Tendi. That's TENDI. You can find links to my True Blood podcast, Fang Bangers Pod, on Blue Sky and Instagram at Fang Bangers Pod. That's bangers with a Z or Z. You can find links to my James Bond podcast, Pay Attention 007, on Blue Sky and Instagram at Pay Attention 007 Pod. And at moviejawn.com, that is JAWN.
Yeah, you can catch me on Blue Sky and Letterboxd at Maddie Hugh, MattyHugh. And while you're looking up Pay Attention 007 Pod at moviejawn.com, I'm going to be trying to write for them a little bit more this year, so you may see the odd piece from me, not Star Trek related most likely, but you never know. And I can't wait to introduce to the city of Edmonton the Philly slang of John and what it is.
Oh yeah, I can't wait for you to explain that to all the locals. You should talk to Emily Mazur because she collects like some Star Trek novelizations. I think she does for like other, she's in charge of TV genre.
Yeah.
She like does other novelizations too, but I know she has like some Star Trek ones.
Nice. You can also catch us together on Blue Sky and Instagram at PodRace, and you can also email us at podrace@gmail.com.
Please remember to rate and review us on the podcatching system of your choice. Thank you again to our editor, Melissa, and to DJ Empirical for our interstellar theme song.
Until next time, computer and program.
Bye.